This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here, Greg.
Plenty of politics to talk about for weeks, even months. We were all waiting breathlessly to see what would be this compromise version of health care reform legislation spearheaded by Montana Senator Max Baucus, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. He finally unveiled it on Wednesday with no other senator standing near him, and pretty much both sides of the aisle are declaring it dead on arrival, John. So what do you make of that, and where does this whole debate stand?
Well, it appears as though the gang of six is now down to the gang of one. The Lone Ranger is Max Baucus of Montana, and he is truly alone in the sense that he's being fired upon from the left and the right. That's obvious. Senator Jay Rockefeller denounced the plan. MoveOn.org branded it a plan to increase the profits of insurance companies, echoing a theme I first heard from incoming President Rich Trumka at the Christian Science Monitor breakfast 2 weeks ago. Similarly, there is no Republican supporter for it at all, and Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell has denounced the plan. That said, I'm not certain we've seen the last of it. Senator Bob Bennett is meeting with the president and talking to him about working on a compromise proposal. Jay Rockefeller, within moments of his denunciation, was summoned to the White House and then discussed this with President Obama. He has really not ruled it out for all of his bellicosity. And finally, remember something. Everyone was nervous about the original health care plan, H.R. 3200, fattening the deficit. This does not increase the deficit. That's going to be Max Baucus' selling point, albeit his only one. Let's wait and see what happens.
John, where do the Democrats stand right now? Republicans keep pointing out that they have the votes to pass whatever they want. So to say that Republicans are obstructing this process is inaccurate. But if you look at the whip count, or at least the apparent whip count, it appears the Democrats can't pass something with a public option because there's enough blue dogs to vote against it, and there's enough liberals or progressives, as they like to term themselves, who demand nothing without a public option. So where do they stand?
Well, not in a very strong position, to say the least. And remember something, even if the president were to use all of his political clout and Senator Reid in the Senate were to twist arms with all his might, remember something. There's only 59 Democratic senators. The death of Edward Kennedy has removed, at least temporarily, a filibuster-proof Senate. They cannot get cloture. And at this point, everyone has said the issue has to be decided one way or another by the time Congress adjourns. Massachusetts may well elect another liberal Democrat next January. That doesn't deal with the present issue at this time.
John, however, there's this sticky little issue known as reconciliation, in which
we
could declare this a budget issue and therefore only a simple majority is required. Then what?
Will you please stop chewing on that old rag? Look, I went through this during the Bush administration. I covered it so much when we talked about the nuclear option. You'll remember when they were going to have an up or down vote on the rules, which then would require the vice president to cast a tie-breaking vote or issue key rulings on this that would have led to ending the filibuster on anything except bills. That would have cleared the way for a lot of justices to come out. The senators did not want to do it. In those days, there was a gang of 14, a bipartisan group that reached a compromise. They will not change the rules, and they will not go for reconciliation at this point. That involves doing too much that they normally don't do. And incidentally, Human Events, for those who don't understand it, and I'll admit I'm learning about it, is producing a feature entitled Reconciliation for Dummies.
John, another figure who's become quite famous over the past week or so, South Carolina Congressman Joe Wilson. On Tuesday, the House approved, largely along partisan lines, but not entirely, a resolution of disapproval. It's not really binding, but it is permanently in the congressional record. Wilson doesn't seem all that bothered by it. What do you make of the past week for him?
In the famous words of Liberace, when he won a libel suit after some very serious things were said against him in London in 1959, I'll cry all the way to the bank. And that's what Joe Wilson is doing. He has raised more than $2 million in small donations, contributors coming from all 50 states. Now, his opponent has raised an equal amount of money, but this is a pretty reliably Republican district, having been in the GOP's hands since 1964. I think politically he's on solid ground. In addition, I actually read the resolution and the instructions from Majority Leader Hoyer. This is the weakest possible resolution one can offer expressing disapproval. And indeed, there was a question from the parliamentarian about whether Congressman Wilson's outburst violated the decorum of debate or just decorum in general. My guess is the incident will come up over and over again, but politically, Joe Wilson is solid. And I spoke to him about an hour after the vote, and he told me not only has he received letters of encouragement from throughout the country, but throughout the world, the most heartening coming from Baghdad.
And, John, another postscript on this, of course, after the Wilson vote on Tuesday, you have former President Carter saying multiple times now that he believes that outburst and a lot of the other hostility we're seeing aimed towards the president's agenda due to racism. Your reaction to that?
Jimmy Carter has devoted now 37 years of his life to overcoming the campaign that finally put him in the governorship of Georgia after losing as a liberal and running with the endorsement of Lester Maddox, the segregationist outgoing governor, and running just a vicious race against the very progressive former governor Carl Sanders, thwarting his comeback. This is a dark part of his career, and I think he tries to do penance for it. Unfortunately, his penance sometimes misses the mark. No one talked about racism until he got into the act, and I think no one wants to continue the debate. I would suggest Jimmy Carter go back to Habitat for Humanity to make himself relevant.
John, another issue that's now gaining more and more attention on Capitol Hill deals with the liberal activist group ACORN, which the president had ties with years and years ago. There is now a vote that already happened in the Senate, overwhelmingly voting to remove housing and urban development grants aimed towards ACORN's use. This all comes in the wake of multiple hidden camera reports in which ACORN officials in various cities, including Washington, including Baltimore and New York, basically tried to do whatever they could to help pimps and prostitutes avoid paying taxes. What's the larger fallout here, if any?
The larger fallout is that the ugly side of ACORN, the kind that traffics one step away from breaking the law, walks along the line, if you will, is being brutally exposed to the public. I've heard these stories anecdotally for years. Now we have it on film. Now, again, they can deny the funding. ACORN, as it has done in the past, can simply change its name and say, look, we're not the evil ACORN anymore. My guess is that they will ban money to groups that engage in this kind of activity, and it will be very, very hard to vote against it. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota, who has been in the forefront of trying to keep tax dollars from ACORN, has written Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Sean Donovan asking for guidelines for what kinds of groups receive federal HUD money and which do not. This is an issue that won't go away, and if ACORN survives, some of the members who voted in its corner will not.
We're talking with John Gizzi of Human Events. John, two quick questions before we let you go. You mentioned that right now Democrats in the Senate only have 59 votes following the death of Senator Kennedy. There's a special election coming in January, but right now Massachusetts lawmakers are starting the debate over once again changing Massachusetts law and allowing Governor Deval Patrick to appoint an interim replacement until that election. What do you expect to happen there?
I expect that it will not see the light of day. Now, I realize that there's tremendous pressure because of the health care debate to get a Democratic senator in there, and they've even spoken of Mike Dukakis as a stopgap senator. Well, all things being equal, a lot of lawmakers realize they are not going to gain that much from changing a rule they only passed 5 years ago. And I've noticed that the legislature in Boston is moving very, very slowly on this. Well, one has a primary in December and a special election in January. My guess is the law will stay as it is.
One other passing related to a prominent Democrat, and that's Jody Powell, who served as a key aide and a press secretary to President Jimmy Carter. Your thoughts on his legacy, John? He was in the office when you came to town, I believe.
Yes, and Jody Powell was very much like Tony Snow and a few others that I knew, someone who transcended partisan breakdowns among reporters. He was what he appeared to be, a good old boy from Georgia, who got along very well with the press in all stripe, would love to joke that he could never quit smoking, and in fact, he had bummed OPs, other people's cigarettes, from Golda Meir once, which he was rather proud of. Stories like that endeared him to the press, and years later made him a very successful figure in public relations. And, you know, as far as he went, he still remained the country boy who treated others with respect. I can remember many times when it would be 6 or 6:30 picking up the phone, and he'd return my call to when I would call to check his memory about something that went on in Georgia politics when he was coming up as a driver for a young candidate named Jimmy Carter. He'll be missed.
John, unfortunately, we'll have to call time there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure. As the health care debate gets more incendiary than the weather, I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.